Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
A very good Friday morning to you. If you notice this song, I don't know if you listen to this in stereo or not.
Young people speak.
All the vocals are in the right speaker.
I'm getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Pretty cool if you're into that kind of stuff. Let me tell you what's not pretty cool.
What a field day for the heat.
A thousand people in the street.
Seattle is not pretty cool. You know, all that bullshit about, yeah, we have this really cool city and all this shit. One of the things, this is my analysis, which tends to be spot on, by the way. Yeah, just in case you don't know, that's a fact. One of the things that got the violence going around the country after George Floyd was murdered was what happened in Minneapolis and the reaction of a mayor who is one of the, he's an elected politician. He doesn't have too much leader in him, okay? And clearly overmatched by the situation that he encountered, and he ran. And the nation and a lot of the world watched that. And what happened? People went in the street and did the same thing. Why? Well, I mean, if it works in Minneapolis, why wouldn't it work for us? And so to me, the danger of what you see in Seattle is, I mean, set your watch to it. It's going to happen somewhere else in the country. And so to me, right, I can't remember what I was watching last night, but, you know, and it was this whole, it was a series of clips of all these different politicians that says nobody's above the law. Nobody's above the law. Nobody's above the law. Nobody's above the law. But we keep seeing instances where people are above the law. And most of them happen inside the cities of Democratic mayors, inside states of Democratic governors. And, you know, there's this altered state of reality, except if you live in an area that was annihilated by that. Then there is no altered state of reality. Okay. It's up close and personal for your ass. But for the rest of them, not so much. Not so much. And so, you know, what's going on in Seattle to me is disturbing. But it's like, what do we have police officers for? If it's not to maintain, right, the good order and discipline of a community. And why do we have laws if people aren't subject to them? That you can just go down and you can destroy the property of your city. You can take over buildings. You can ransack them. You can do all that shit. and nobody's going to do anything to you? The laws don't apply? I just don't understand. And to me, what's happening is there's other people around the country, and I will be as shocked as I was that Mark Esper last Monday, that Mark Esper still had a job, as I will be if this doesn't happen somewhere else in the nation in the next 48 hours. Yeah, I will be shocked because this shit is contagious. And when you see it, when you see things like this happen, it's just head shaking, you know. And what about the people that live inside that six square block? What about their lives? Don't they have the right to be protected by the city of Seattle? Don't they have a right to come and go without being harassed and without having to fight barriers and guys walking around with long rifles? I mean, what the fuck, Seattle? And I'll tell you what, I watched that mayor. Holy shit, man. Whatever drug she's taken ought to be put on limited distribution. Because, I mean, you hear her come on, and the shit that comes out of her mouth is un-be-fucking-leavable. Yeah, this is actually patriotism. Taking this part of the city over, closing down a police precinct, sending police response times because they're not out of that precinct anymore, right? From 3 to 5 minutes, right? To 13 to 16 minutes, no big deal. No big deal. It's just the exercise of, you know, of political expression. Right. So I don't know. I mean, this stuff's head shaking. But I will say this, and I find solace in this. This will fail, right? All of this anarchy and cancel culture and all that, it will fail. It will ultimately eat itself. So in the long arc of history, right, things like this come and go. And, you know, it's the latest, you know, it's the latest and greatest thing. And then all of a sudden, it leaves us. Because it's not sustainable, because it's not linked to the truth. And even though news organizations, media outlets that aren't interested in the truth trumpet, at some point, it all loses its traction because it's built on a lie. So good morning to you on a Friday. I'll tell you what was interesting also yesterday was, now maybe I didn't see it and somebody can forward it to me, but the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff silenced the POTUS flamethrower account on Twitter. Did I miss it? Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I did not see the President of the United States, the flamethrower in chief, take on General Milley yesterday after he apologized for being part of that and said that he too was learning, still in his job. And so, again, General Milley's staking out his territory. Unless I might have missed it. But, so, Secretary Esper last week said that we were not there yet relative to the Insurrection Act of 1807. You know, and even the president. I mean, he comes out again, you know, and he's just bloviating about Seattle. You know, and to me, what he ought to say is, well, we're very concerned based on what we saw in Minneapolis. The nation's watching this lawlessness. It's not fair to the people that live inside that area that somehow or other the laws of the city of Seattle don't apply anymore. It's not fair to the police officers of the city who are now going to have to go back in there and unscrew this mess. It's not fair to the taxpayers who foot the bill to it that a mayor arbitrarily decides to allow somebody to take over part of the city. And so to me, measured, responsible, spot on. But when he says, I'm going to go in there and do it, you didn't do that last time, right? The Secretary of Defense kind of called bullshit on you, as did a whole bunch of other people, and you just look like a dope. There's an editorial in the Wall Street Journal today by Kim Strassel, an op-ed piece. It's not an editorial, but it's called Trump Beating Trump. And kind of it's stuff like that. Stuff like that. General Milley silences the POTUS account on Twitter. Haven't seen it much. Now, evidently, he's going to talk about that in an interview he did last night. So we'll see what he has to say, but pretty interesting. We're waiting for the mushroom cloud over Washington, D.C., but it never materialized. Post-traumatic winning, headed for back to the East Coast, back to Camp Lejeune on the 25th of June. So fired up about that. And I think, hopefully, got my fingers crossed, but we're also going to do a leader session. 2nd Marine Division is further ahead than everybody relative to this issue about trying to be a leader in this era of where suicide is much more prevalent. How do you got to lead? How do you got to mentor? How do you have to love them, right? In order to make sure that we drive that number down and hopefully eliminate it. And so how do leaders have to do it? How do you keep this issue in front of people? And whatnot. So that's going to be a piece of this visit, I believe. So I'm excited. About that. So yeah. So looking forward to as some of the COVID-19 restrictions get loosened up, and we can use venues like the Base Theater, and you can put more than 10 people in a 1,500 seat theater. Looking forward to that. So we'll see. I'm supposed to do it up in Montana for retreats from veterans with the Bar X organization. So looking forward to that. I'll get a chance to see Montana Man, who's going to be on the program today, talking food. So fired up about having Rob Schwarz on. He's a number two All Marine Radio head chef. So I talked to the chef yesterday. He's doing good. His recovery continues. He sounded a little tired, in my opinion, and he told me he was, but he said he's getting stronger, and we'll wait to have him rejoin us. I wanted to talk a little bit about the history of the whole Confederate monument thing. And how those things were protected for years. So it shocks people today, and I know because I've had the conversation, that the Democratic Party was the party of slavery. They look at you like, what? And they don't believe you. And then they'll go look it up, and they're like, oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, they're called Dixiecrats. It's why the Kennedys wanted nothing to do with the civil rights movement, because it was a vote loser during the primary in the southern states, so you couldn't touch it. So, you know, these monuments, once the Reconstruction phase passed, and we were healing the wounds of the nation, monuments were allowed to go up in the South. They were protected forever, though, by the Democratic Party. And so when serious discussions, you know, came about, you know, should we continue to have these monuments? I mean, they were protected by politicians. who polled the issue in the district and said, yeah, that's not a good issue in the district. So if you want to know how you got there, then that's how you got there. Protected class by politicians. And now people will look and go, geez, how could that be? Just do a little reading about it. Now, the latest iteration of this is Naval Academy is looking at their buildings, named after graduates of the Naval Academy who had buildings named after them. And again, this is after they graduated, they served in the United States Navy, transitioned to the Confederate Navy, and then subsequent to that, had buildings named after them. That's curious, right? But again, the power of Southern states to be represented at the Naval Academy. That's real stuff. So the history is curious. Now, the question becomes, as it was raised to me on a number of occasions yesterday, when is enough enough? And Will Cosentini said, so George Washington, at some point we're going to have to rename Washington, D.C., yes. And so it goes. You know, Washington, a slave owner. So to me, and you can't have a grown-up conversation about any of this because of the whole cancel culture thing. It's just... the technique is scream louder, get more emotional, right? And be confrontational. That's the technique. Capture it on video and put it out there for God and everybody. And if you do that enough, we'll hit something that strikes a nerve. Okay, because what the cancel culture has learned and what they leverage is the same thing that the North Vietnamese learned. The same thing that all of our opponents learn is that the way to influence American public opinion is through their television. Okay, so prolong the event, make it hurt, and then keep your fingers crossed that you get images like the American public saw coming out of Vietnam, the little girl running down the street without any clothes on after a napalm attack, right? You know, you see her, the picture, she's screaming, you know, her face is contorted and crying. And then, the video of the police chief executing a member of the Viet Cong who murdered a whole series of South Vietnamese government officials, right, during the Tet Offensive. But that's immaterial to the video, right? The power of the video. And so that's the way this is. But here's relative to the federal government, to the Naval Academy, to Army bases and things like that. My personal opinion is, were I black, I should not have to go to work on a base named for somebody who fought against my country during, you know, a rebellion. That's wrong. Now, I understand the history of how it got here. I understand there's a ton of history behind it. And as Will Cosentini said yesterday, U.S. people who Fort Hood is named for, and they're like, I don't know. It's the same shit relative to the SS, right, for scout sniper in the Marine Corps. If you ask Marines, like, where did that SS insignia, those letters come from? Those that believe they know will tell you, well, from a rock band from the, like, 70s, right? Kiss? And you look at them and you're like, you're dumb as hell, right? Do you know what the SS was during... the German SS was during World War II? No, man, I have no idea. And that's what they say. 90% of them, that's what they say. And that's maybe they don't even know who KISS is. So I get the point, but the underlying truth is what it is. My problem with all of this is the bleaching of our history. The story of the name, the story of how it got named, why it got named is important. The story of how the name, you know, remained is important. Powerful voting blocks, right? And those powerful Dixiecrats in the South, they wielded a lot of power in the federal government. And they were the authors of, you know, of segregation, of Jim Crow, right? And that power was real. And if you wanted to get things done in the American government, you had to deal with them. And one of the things you were not going to screw with the things that they held important to them. Oddly enough, I don't know if you saw the story, but the last person receiving a Civil War pension passed away this past week. Yeah, you heard that right. She was the daughter Let me get the story straight, but yeah, I saw the story. I was like, hold on, let me do the math. How could that even be? But yeah, she passed. The last person to receive a Civil War pension dies at the age of 90. Irene Triplett, whose father defected from the Confederate Army and enlisted with the Union, was collecting $73.13 a month. How about that? So until May 31st, the United States government was still paying out a Civil War pension. Why would the daughter qualify for her father's pension? Irene Triplett, who died at the age of 90, received a check for $73.13 every month. Her father, Mose Triplett, M-O-S-E, served as a private in the Confederate Army before deserting and shifting his allegiance to the Union. Mose's defection likely saved his life, reports Blake Stilwell from military.com. He decided to switch sides after falling ill shortly before the Battle of Gettysburg, a clash in which 92% of his former unit perished. Oh, that's why. The fact that Triplett was receiving a Civil War pension in 2020 owed much to the advanced age of her father, who was 83, when his second wife, 34-year-old E-L-I-D-A, Elida Hall, gave birth to their daughter in 1930. Holy smokes, that's serious stuff, right? He was 83 and became a father? Wow. That's impressive. Such pairings were fairly common during the Great Depression, as Civil War veterans' pensions offered financial security to younger women willing to take care of aging husbands, according to the journal. Mose died at the age of 92 in 1938. Elida died in 1967. But why would the daughter be entitled to her father's pension? In 2014, for the Journal, Phillips wrote that Triplett had a difficult childhood. She was beaten by both her teacher and parents. At school, peers teased her for being the daughter of a traitor. After her mother died in 1967, she lived in a series of nursing homes. She made friends, chewed tobacco, and became known for her laughter and buoyant demeanor. So, interesting story, as long as things Confederate are in the news. But it is a good question, like, how far does it go? And I was talking about, I don't want to turn on my TV. I don't want to go to a sporting event and in a space when we're supposed to honor our nation have to deal with fucking protests shoved in my face. I don't want to do that. And then I got an email that said, if you give, hold on, I'll read you the email. It's entitled exactly, right? That's poking fun at me, one of my words. What Will said, the discussion about memorials being removed, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. This is what I was meaning about not playing the national anthem anymore. I don't watch the NFL because of the disrespectful spectacle of kneeling, and now NASCAR is removing the Confederate flag and painting a car with BLM bullshit logo. Where does it end? We keep conceding ground little by little, inch by inch. Not playing the anthem would be another check mark in the anarchist playbook. Tired of it. And so, yeah, that's a valid point. I go there to escape. I go there to enjoy myself. The last thing I need is a screwdriver stuck in, right, into a wound and then turned. Now let's all enjoy ourselves. Right, they're athletes. I don't give a fuck about what they do in their personal life. I don't give a fuck what they think about politically. I just want to go watch a game. Okay, can I not do it without, you know, you making your political points in my face? Is that needle too hard to thread? Right? Is that too hard to thread? So anyway, some random thoughts on a Friday. As I said, Rob Schwartz is going to join us. We're going to talk food with him, and we'll check the news as well today. And I'll get a chance to hang out with Montana Matt for about a week. And when I head up to Montana in July, so I'm fired up about that as post-traumatic winning kind of comes back. So I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to doing that again. So on a Friday, Whitney Houston makes this morning official. We'll see what the day has in store for Seattle. And as all of this continues to unfold, I think probably, in my opinion, one of the most interesting, right, parts of all of this is the whole police union piece. And so, to me, when a police officer goes to has a complaint filed against him, and that there's a process for that complaint. I read an article, I don't know where it was yesterday. It might have been the Wall Street Journal, but I read an article that talked about the power in terms of who selects the arbiter, and then what happens to the file, you know, once it's adjudicated, how soon is it expunged from somebody's record? Who can access it? I mean, all that stuff. All that stuff is significant. And I'll tell you this. I'll give you a personal experience with police unions. I was running, I got elected to the city council in Grand Forks, North Dakota, while I was deployed in 2006. I've told this story before. I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to put my name on the ballot. So I'm in Iraq. I put my name on the ballot. I get elected. So I come home from Iraq and, you know, and for me, it was an extension of, you know, my leadership abilities and, you know, my service to the nation, but just doing it in my community, which I thought I could help. So I decide I'm going to run for mayor. The guy who's mayor there is still there, and it's a miracle. I don't know. I mean, it's a tribute to not doing much, I think. You don't offend too many people. You don't affect the status quo, and the chamber runs the city, and that's the way it goes. So anyhow, I'm still not good with losing. But anyway, I'm at a friend of mine at his law office downtown named Doug Christensen. He was on the city council with me. And Doug and I were kind of allies in that we both believed in the numbers of the budget, right? Try not to raise people's taxes, right? So if we're going to do this, what aren't we going to do? Because if we don't decide that, then you're telling me that we're going to raise somebody's taxes, and I'm not really for that, right? Our job is to do needs, not wants. So let's talk money. So the cops, a police officer, comes to us, named Derek Zimmel, as a matter of fact. So he meets us in Doug's office, and he looks at me and says, look, we want both of you, and Mac, you're running for mayor. We want you to support moving our pension plan from a defined contribution plan, which is a 401k variant, to a defined benefit plan, which is the U.S. military style, right? So, and that's a big step and cost about $500,000, which is a lot of money in a small city. And I said, okay. I said, I'd be happy to talk about it. He said, well, the mayor said that he'll just pay for it out of the general fund. I said, yeah, well, I won't do that because that means I got to raise people's taxes. So if you want that to happen, do you want to open labor negotiations with the city? And what will you concede to help us make that real? Because I'm more than willing to talk to you about it. And he looked at me and he said nothing. So the mayor will do that. If you won't do it, then we're going to go door to door and campaign against you. And I said, oh, that's it? So support it or else? And he just looked at me and shrugged his shoulders. I said, well, I won't support that. He said, well, we'll go door to door and campaign against you. I said, go ahead. Tell the citizens of this community that I'm against the police and fire guys. Go ahead. Now, I lost the election. But I don't think it had too much to do with what the police and fire guys did. It was more the chamber, you know, squarely on the side of the mayor. So, but anyway, my point is police and unions do this shit all the time. They essentially put a gun to a politician's head and say, if you don't support this, right? If you don't support this, then we're going to come out and campaign for your opponent. And we will. We'll go door to door. And we're going to tell people you're against the cops and fire guy. Yeah. Ever wonder how a police officer can retire at 95% of their highest wage, right, earned? Ever wonder how that happens? I'll tell you how it happens. At some point, it started at maybe approximately what the military has, which is 50%. And then somebody said, hey, look, you know, all we want is we want to bump that to 55%. Okay, that's all we want. And if you'll support that, then we'll campaign for you and against your opponent. We'll come out and we'll put ads on TV that said your opponent's against police and fire guys and their families. And that's the game that gets played. The teachers union plays it as well. And so to me, I think that's the most interesting part of this issue. And that is for police officers that have a string of incidents, right? Everyone should be adjudicated. That file should be, right, reviewable by the appropriate people. Now, who that is, I don't know. I have to look at the issue more closely. I would also say, you know, if the union puts, you know, one person on that review board, there ought to be another person, I don't know, at large from the community. And then, in my opinion, the police chief gets the deciding vote. Do we keep this person or not? Because when you hear, and there was a story that I read that was part of this article that talked about, and it was here in California, the police officer who had multiple complaints for aggressive behavior shot and killed somebody. The city settled with the family for, you know, $850,000, something like that. And then the officer had it expunged from his record, and the city was forced to rehire him. Yeah, that's no shit. Now, that might be a case of glaring abuse, okay, that may or may not happen very often around the country. I would hope it wouldn't. But to me, that's that system. It's like, okay, we've diffused it. We've got these complaints to go before this committee. Now we've got to get a hold of this committee. And the way you do that is you amend the bylaw of the law. You amend the law that creates that, and you say that now the police chief, you know, or the police union representative, right, will have final determination in terms of the arbiter of this case. Well, I mean, they just won. And so that system needs to be reformed. It needs to be a little bit more open so that file is accessible. And the police union cannot dominate that process. So interesting stuff relative to all this, the future of the nation, how we get there. And again, mind you, from the data that I've seen, we're talking about on an annual basis less than 5 cases of that. So we need to deal with that so we can get to the more substantive issues of why over 50 years after the Civil Rights Act has been enacted that we're still dealing with entrenched black unemployment, crime, murder, burglary, entrenched. We've got to be able to solve that. And the solutions that Democrats have handed the nation and the black community in the past, we got to get through that. We got to say that shit does not work. All you've done is kept those people in those urban areas. We got to find a way to end this. It's been too long. I had a Marine call me yesterday. Wayne Bowie. Called me Michael, too. Gunnery sergeant, right? Michael. I'm like, what's up, Wayne? And it sounds weird, right? I met him at a meeting. He started asking adult kind of questions. And I looked around. And I said, who are you? I don't know you. You're new here. And he's a leader, he's get stuff done guy, he's what you would expect from a Marine gunnery sergeant. And he's black. He called me yesterday, and we had an interesting conversation. So you'll hear him next week. All right, his thoughts on all of this. So, good morning to you on a Friday. Whitney Houston makes this Friday morning official. And this dedicated to everybody who listens. I got an email yesterday from somebody who listens and said, Mac, my wife and I listen when we're walking, and I just wanted to say thank you. And actually, it's from Daryl Horn. You heard about three different versions of his life and career in the Marine Corps relative to being a member of Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines. I think through those, you met his lovely wife, Marilyn. And theirs is a great love story. And so they listen when they walk. So he just sent me a note saying, I've enjoyed listening this past week and as we go on our walk. So and this is what I would tell everybody. The thing I always try to do on the show is be respectful and be considerate and have a broad-based discussion that tries to get to the truth on different issues. And I believe if we do that, we can do just about anything on and talk about anything and do just about anything on the planet. So this is dedicated to everybody who listens. I appreciate it. But, you know, just our country is great for a reason. And it's great for a reason because in the long arc of the history of our country, right, we ultimately get it towards the truth and get it towards a better place. And I believe that. And so this is dedicated to that proposition. Hang in there. It may get worse in the short run, but ultimately Americans tend to figure it out and tend to get it to a better place. So hang in there.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country, we care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
time for us to check the weather here on a Friday. I'll read you an email about Seattle. So I've watched the events of the last week. I listen to you not because you're that good, but everybody else sucks so bad. There you go. I'm watching this nonsense in Seattle, and honestly, I cannot believe what I'm seeing. Since when do the laws of the nation not apply to citizens? Is it possible that Americans simply fairy dust that shit out of the equation? To quote you, where are the adults in Seattle? I had a similar thought. When do the next group of chuckleheads take over another city's downtown? If they're not already planning it in Minneapolis, I would be shocked. Because that guy is about as weak of a leader as I've ever seen on TV. He looks like he's going to cry every time I see him. You know what? That's straight up true. He does look like he's going to cry. He looks like he's upset. He wants to cry. Anyway. All right, let me do the weather. And then some shithole weather. 83 degrees and sunny in Quantico. It is 72 degrees and raining at Camp Lejeune. It is 84 degrees, 29 palms under sunny skies. Pendleton has partly sunny and 65 degrees. Thank God it's going to be cooler. Camp Smith in Hawaii, raining. 72 as the sun comes up there. Okinawa, dark, cloudy, and 82. South Central Afghanistan, evening, clear, and 90. And Al Anbar in Iraq has cooled off a little bit. It is sunny and 96 as evening approaches there. From Bev in Churchbridge, Saskatchewan. Did you get your flower seeds planted? We did. Colleen planted them. I don't really know how to do that. I thought this, I don't know, this is, I'm stupid, right? I'm agriculturally stupid. Although I did live in North Dakota. So where they do a lot of agriculture, but I thought, so I bought seeds, right? Well, what do seeds look like? Well, I mean, I've seen grapefruit seeds. I've seen sunflower seeds. I expected the seeds to kind of look like sunflower seeds, but smaller. But that's not what they look like. They look like kind of like dirt. I'm like, those are seeds? Something's going to happen there? So Colleen's like, Dad. I'm like, well, what do you know? You're like, you're not a farmer. So anyway, so we planted those. And yes, I'm diligent about watering them too. So in Churchbridge today, mix of clouds and sun and southeast winds at about 14 today. Looking for an afternoon high of 73 degrees. And then a picture of some ducks with their asses up in the air as they bob for apples. And so Bev says, bottoms up. And this is from the First Sergeant in Hickory, North Carolina. It's fucking hot and humid. The temperature says on the coast is 73. Where is Hickory, North Carolina? Is it, how far inland is it? Hickory, North Carolina. It is, I'll tell you where Hickory is. Hickory is, I don't see anything that I know. Let's see, there's Charlotte. Hickory is northwest of Charlotte. Yeah. So the geography of North Carolina looks like this. Okay, you have on the coast to the north, in the northern part, you have Nag's Head, You go middle of the state, Morehead City, southern part of the state, down the southern one-third is Wilmington, so north to south. In the center of the state, kind of you have the Raleigh-Durham area. You have, you go south of that, you have Fayetteville, right? That is what, home of the 82nd Airborne, Fort Bragg. And those are the two main cities kind of in the center. And then you go further west, and Charlotte, North Carolina, is the biggest city in the state. And so Hickory is northwest of Charlotte, right? So if you go north of Charlotte, you get Winston-Salem, Greensboro, places like that. So there you have it. And then on the really, really west side where it gets narrow, you have Asheville. So Hickory, north of Charlotte, on the in the kind of the west central part of the state. So maybe it's hotter there. Maybe it's hotter there. First Sergeant says it's harder. So we'll take him at his word. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll check news headlines. I want to talk about the COVID thing. Yeah. I want to talk about the COVID thing. More of I just want to talk numbers again. Remember, don't pay attention to cases. Okay? Pay attention to hospital percentages. Percentages, not numbers, percentages. Okay? And pay attention to, right, ICU percentages and deaths. Okay? So, and you know, hospital admission numbers are important too, but percentages are important. Because again, remember, when you test more people, you're going to get more positives, right? And it's not the positives that we're worried about. It's the hospital admissions and it's the ICU, both their numbers and the rates. Okay, so a little bit of education. The Wall Street Journal is catching up on that, so I like that. So I'm not sure if they're listening to All Marine Radio. If not, they should be. A lot of good gouge on this son of a bitch. So more of this fine program, right, coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world, leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It's a little music to decompress by, all right? Yeah, so don't be afraid to grab somebody and dance with them if you want to.
From across the sea, it lingered there to touch your head and walk with me. All summer long, we sang a song, and then we strolled that golden sand. Two sweethearts and the summer wind.
That's right. Take a deep breath. All right. This is how incredible my life is. We went to that break, right? And my phone rings, so I think somebody just listened, because all of a sudden I go to the break and my phone rings. Somebody who said, I sent you a couple emails, but I didn't hear back, so I thought I'd call. My husband passed away a month ago, and I loved what I saw you do, and I just wondered if I could talk to you. Yeah. That's why if you have not embraced post-traumatic winning and the ideas in that shit, you need to. You know, because you can have those experiences too, right? So, yeah. And I want to say you read the story, but I'm not gonna say more than that about it. But because I read about it in the news, so yeah, that just happened to me like seconds ago. I mean, and just like I said, I mean, it's like life changing stuff, and all you got to do is be willing to listen and then tell people the truth and show them a path. You know, will you do that? Will you do that? Right? You know, I mean, it's what I love about Daryl Horn's story. You know, he, you know, in Vietnam, he's with Bravo Company 19 during Operation Buffalo when, you know, they have 55 Marines killed, 65 wounded, and the 26 of them stay. Every one of them is wounded. They're just not very severely, so they stay. And, you know, he comes home. He's the father of two. Of twin girls that he's never seen. You know, he's got a loving family, and that sustains him. And then he retires. And like a lot of Vietnam veterans, Now he's got all this time on his hands, like a lot of disabled veterans too. A lot of amputees because they're disabled, right? You know, they and if they don't go back to work right away because of therapy, they've got a lot of time on their hands to think about it. And now you're trying to make sense of it. And then what makes sense? Sharing my story makes sense. And then the truth that comes out of that. And so it's, and you know, if you talk, you know, if you listen to those interviews, which you should, Daryl, I've never seen anybody spell it like he spells it, D-E-R-L, Horn, H-O-R-N. And it's the story of his story and the story of as he goes to Vietnam and then an incredible love story. And then Daryl staying true to his Christian values and with the encouragement of his wife, Marilyn, he writes a book. And now he goes and speaks. It's really funny. In one part of the interview, he talks about, you know, being asked to go speak on Valentine's Day. And I think they wanted him to talk about the power of love. And he's like, what was I going to say about that? And ultimately, all he did was tell the truth, and which is pretty cool. So I cannot tell you the things that happened to me in my life because of post-traumatic winning. And post-traumatic winning is simply the amalgamation of truths that, you know, that I've heard doing this radio program for going now into the fifth year. It's been amazing. And people that you hear on this program, and I'll pick two of them, you know, Tim Lynch, who you hear on a weekly basis if you listen to this program. You know, you've heard Tim talk about being homeless. And you've heard him, and we give him a hard time because he gets emotional when he talks about him being homeless. Right? His pride and, you know, and, but, you know, the wonderful thing about Tim is that he's fought through it. And now, you don't know this, but he's going to go change somebody's life here pretty soon. And so, and all it is telling people the truth. And as I say, somebody quoted me yesterday in an email, the truth lands with a thud and needs no salesman. And if you'll simply do that, you'll have these experiences. And they just they're life changing, and again, to go down the Viktor Frankl rabbit hole, they affirm, right, your giving, your sharing, and they give meaning to your suffering. All of that, right? Suffering that until you do that has no meaning other than just being difficult to live with. Okay, so. Anyhow, I share that with you. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you this. Something good's going to come out of this. I don't know what it is, but something good's going to come out of this. I know that. So, anyhow, to the news we go. Yeah. Sounds like something I'd say to my mom. I was minding my own business, Mom. And Kathleen smoking her cigarettes looking at me. And then what happened? Like, well, no, my mom liked me. Top story. So I'm not sure who chose this as a top story, but it's a story about Army uniforms. It's top story in Stars and Stripes. Pinks and greens inspired uniform will be issued to new soldiers in 2021, according to the Army. Well, how about that? How about that? Secretary of Defense orders a review of National Guard's actions during the racial protests in D.C. I will tell you this. The guy who evidently was in the middle of all that was the Secretary of the Army, a guy named McCarthy. And he's got a little bit to answer for. And again, what it is, it's B-team guys acting to pressure, you know, from the president. Right? In his little tirades, and, you know, the Secretary of Defense, you know, didn't stand up right away, wasn't sure about what he should do. He fucked it up. The chairman, he fucked it up. He came clean yesterday, much to his credit, right? And you know, I'm not sure if he told the president beforehand what he was going to say, but, you know, it's him staking out his claim. And you know that he knows, well, I don't know what the president's going to say. Maybe he's going to ask for my resignation. And I'll be happy to give it under those circumstances. You know, don't want to. I want to serve, but happy to do that. So, you know, McCarthy, Esper, anyway, missiles used in the Saudi attack last year came from Iran, according to the United Nations. The whole world has been caught by a deadly disease. Where's the United States, the United Nations been? Crickets, 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 crickets. This story is published in Bloomberg, carried by the Stars and Stripes. Cruise missiles that slammed into the Saudi oil complex last year likely came from Iran, the United Nations concluded in a confidential report supporting U.S. allegations that the Tehran government was behind the attack, which sent tremors through global energy markets and shook the kingdom. So Saudi Arabia attacks, or Iran attacks Saudi Arabia, and whatever came of that? Nothing? Yeah, we're just on to the next event from Afghanistan. Afghanistan vows to release more Taliban prisoners, setting stage for additional talks. Afghanistan will soon complete a prisoner release that the Taliban have demanded before starting peace talks to end nearly two decades of war, the country president said. Some 3,000 Taliban prisoners have already been released, according to President Ashraf Ghani. A peace deal signed by the U.S. and the Taliban in February calls for up to 5,000 Taliban to be released in exchange for 1,000 government prisoners. Whoa, that's a 5-to-1 event, man. Are we sure? Who negotiated? I mean, can the United States negotiate a deal to save its ass, for the love of God? My colleagues and I have made the decision to release an additional 2,000 prisoners within a short period, Ghani said. Next week, we should be able to inform the world of the next step. It is still unclear how many government prisoners the Taliban is holding, Ghani said. The number keeps shifting. We need clarity regarding the fate of those that are with them and assurances that the last person remaining will be released. It's interesting, right? As a federal government, you're held to a standard that the Taliban could never meet, and those standards are, you know, forced down your throat. The lead headline in Just the News is, retired generals who denounced Trump could be recalled to active duty and prosecuted, experts say. I'd love to see that, huh? I would love to see that. This is written by Susan Katz Keating. And somebody you've heard on All Marine Radio, a guy named John Dowd, who absolutely blistered General Mattis, right? Dowd has been outspoken in his criticism of Generals Mattis and General McCraven. Quote, this is Dowd speaking, right? He was President Trump's lawyer at one time before he resigned. Retired officers can't make contemptuous remarks of the commander-in-chief. They're all subject to recall. They're subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice until they die. The pertinent law is Title 10 of the U.S. Code. Quote, as part of the UCMJ governing military law, you cannot use contemptuous words against certain officials, including the president. That is a court-martial offense, and yes, you can be recalled to active duty to be court-martialed. I don't know who the hell they think they are, Dowd said. It's stunning to me. I guess the law doesn't apply to them. The law doesn't seem to apply to very many people, right? It's out there. It's written. But it doesn't seem to apply to people. It doesn't apply to people in Seattle. It doesn't seem to apply. Yeah, I'd love to see that court-martial. Yeah, holy shit. Next headline. U.S. Naval Institute News. New SecNav Brathwaite focuses on the next fleet and changing the culture. So he's got a big task in front of him, a former public affairs officer. Picture of him as the SecNav aboard the USS Harry S. Truman. He has not made any big headlines, which is odd for the Secretary of the Navy position here in the last few months. Just 8 work days into his job, Secretary of the Navy Kenneth Brathwaite planned to spend his first of many long nights at the Pentagon in the latest effort to solve the Navy's biggest problem, how to build a fleet to compete with Russia and China without the money to service without the money the service saw during the Cold War buildup. Now the fourth person to sit at the SecNav desk since the Navy and Marine Corps began drafting their latest ideas for what the fleet of tomorrow ought to look like, Brathwaite finds himself with little time to digest the service's near-term and long-term plans and weigh in with his own priorities and vision. In a matter of weeks, he will owe the Defense Secretary his input on both the fiscal 2022 budget and so-called Integrated Naval Force Structure Assessment that looks several years down the line of what the Navy could be. So, Secretary Brathwaite, drinking from a fire hose, but at least he mentioned services, right? The plural, which is refreshing. So the Marine Corps at least was considered. U.S. naval buildup from Marine Corps Times. U.S. naval buildup in the Indo-Pacific region is seen as a warning to China. An Associated Press story written by Lolita Baldor. Now, I don't know who Lolita Baldor is, but that's a pretty sexy name. I don't mean to be a sexist, right, or all that, but Lolita, man, that's like the pregnant with, right, with, so anyway, you name your daughter Lolita? Maybe it's a family name, who knows. For the first time in, am I being a chauvinist? I don't, come on. Washington, for the first time in nearly 3 years, 3 American aircraft carriers are patrolling the Indo-Pacific waters. A massive I had to take a drink of water. For the first time, right, a massive show of naval force in a region roiled by spiking tensions between the United States and China, and a sign that the Navy has bounced back from the worst days of the COVID-19 outbreak. The unusual simultaneous appearance of 3 warships accompanied by Navy cruisers, destroyers, fighter jets, and other aircraft comes as the U.S. escalates criticism of Beijing's response to the COVID-19 outbreak. Its moves to impose greater control over Hong Kong and its campaign to militarize human-made islands in the South China Sea. Quote, this is from Bonnie Glazer, who's the director of the China Power Project. There have been some indications in Chinese writings that the United States was hard hit by COVID-19, that military preparedness was low, so perhaps there's an effort by the United States to signal to China that it should not miscalculate. The Chinese will definitely portray this as an example of U.S. provocations and as evidence that the U.S. is a source of instability in the region. So, the Navy flexing its muscles. Naval Academy. Naval Academy Board calls for removal of Confederate names from buildings. Well, who exactly are they talking about? And how would that have happened? So you would have had to gone to the Naval Academy, right? you would have had to achieve something in the Navy and then resign and then go to work for the Confederate Navy. And then subsequent to that, you would have had to have your name put on a building. By who would do such a thing? And why? Why would that happen? The names of two members of the Confederacy should be removed from buildings at the U.S. Naval Academy, the chairman of the Academy's Board of Visitors said on Thursday. Representative C.A. Dutch Ruppersberger, a Maryland Democrat, said that the Pentagon should consider removing Confederate names from all military bases as people across the country protest against racial inequity and police brutality. I don't think that's the reason. The reason is you should not ask black service members to go to work on bases named for people that helped lead an insurrection against the United States. Quote, this is from Representative Ruppersberger. There's been a discussion of renaming these buildings since at least 2017. As the new chairman, the time for discussion is over. It's time for action. Midshipmen who have earned the privilege to study at one of our nation's most prestigious institutions should not have to walk around campus to see buildings named for men who fought to uphold slavery and promote white supremacy. The Academy Superintendent's residence is named after Franklin Buchanan, the Academy's first superintendent who left to join the Confederate Navy at the start of the Civil War. The Academy's Weapons and Systems Engineering Division is housed in Maury Hall. It's named after Matthew Fontaine Maury, who was a leader in the fields of naval meteorology and navigation. He headed the coast and harbor and river defenses for the Confederate Navy. This isn't about erasing history. We simply shouldn't lift up traitors who fought against American values like equality and tolerance, said Ruppersberger. We are working hard to attract minority applicants to our service academies and all of our service branches. We must send a strong message that's unequivocal to all potential minority applicants that we stand united in opposing the glorification of leaders who defended slavery. You know what? I don't have a problem with that. And now people say, oh, Mac, where is it going to end? I guess we need to have grown-ups and discuss that. But my question is, how did these buildings get named for these guys to begin with? Who thought that was a good idea? That is what I find curious about it all. So now I want to talk about COVID here. I want to talk about COVID. There's an editorial in the Wall Street Journal. And I know it's an editorial because it's written by the editorial board, okay, not an op-ed. It's called the second wave COVID scare. The numbers are better than the headlines, and reopening is necessary. All right, so talks about the stock sell-off yesterday amidst worries of a second wave of COVID-19 infection. And then it quotes Governor Cuomo, Chicken Little, as he's known here on All Marine Radio. Here's what Chicken Little had to say. I watched Chicken Little's father last night. Chicken Little's father, that guy was pretty good. And he's a smart, smart guy. I watched it. Ken Burns did a series on New York, and last night I watched the last chapter, chapter 8. And it's the development of New York City, Manhattan in particular. And I found it really interesting. But in the last one deals with September 11th. And wow, I mean, still, you watch all of that, and it's just, I mean, you can't sit there without getting emotional. You know, and I remember last night I was sitting there thinking, like, that changed my life, changed all the lives of my friends, changed the lives of my sons. Yeah, talk about life-changing event, happens in Manhattan, reverberates through my life to today. So here's a quote from Chicken Little, whose father was, I think, pretty incredible guy, Mario Cuomo. Quote, we know as a fact that reopening other states were seeing significant problems. 12 states that reopened are now seeing spikes. This is a very real possibility. The article goes on, the editorial goes on. This is Mr. Cuomo's excuse for keeping New York City in lockdown purgatory for 12 weeks as other states reopened and other economies rebounded. Democrats cite a spike of cases in Florida, Arizona, and Texas as evidence of a virus resurgence. But more testing, especially in vulnerable communities, is naturally turning up more cases. Cases in Texas have increased by about a third in the last 2 weeks, but also have tests. About a quarter of the new cases are in counties with large prisons, meatpacking plants that were never forced to shut down. Tests have increased by 37% in Florida in 2 weeks, but confirmed cases have risen by 28%. Cases were rising at a faster clip during the last 2 weeks of April, which was at 47%, when much of the state remained in a lockdown. So the states come out of lockdown. This is me, not the editorial. So the states come out of lockdown. More people are being tested, and we're seeing a decrease in the rate of positives. Okay? Now, you can only find that shit out if you're interested in footnotes. Okay? If you're just interested in headlines and bloviating nonsense, then I guess you'll be scared off by, oh, the number of cases is up. Well, no shit, man. We hit play and ended pause. In Arizona, cases have increased 73% in the last 2 weeks, though tests have increased by just 53%. But a quarter of all cases in the states are on Indian reservations, which have especially high risk population. The rate of diabetes is twice as high among Native Americans as whites, and the rate of obesity is 50% higher. Again, these are the footnotes. A more important metric, now stand by, right? Stand by, because I'm going to hit a rim shot. I'm not sure why, but just so you know, a more important statistic is hospitalizations. Yeah, what? Is hospitalization say what? Yeah. Oh, thank God the journal figured this out. In Arizona, the weekly rolling average for new COVID-19 hospitalizations has been flat for a month. So remember, cases, not so important. Hospitalizations and ICU admissions, important. Emergency room visits for COVID-19 have spiked this week, but the number of ER beds in use hasn't changed since April. Hospitals in Arizona and California have reported an increase in cases from U.S. citizens and green card holders returning from Mexico, where hospitals are overwhelmed. But with 22% of ICU beds and 62% of ventilators available, Arizona hospitals should have the capacity to manage an increase in patients as it reopens. Goes on to Texas. Right? Texas has also recently reported an uptick in COVID-19 hospitalizations, mostly in the Houston and Austin areas. Currently, COVID-19 hospitalizations are up about 20% since the state began to reopen, but Governor Greg Abbott says hospitals are not overwhelmed, and much of the increase is tied to nursing homes. The number of currently hospitalized patients per capita is still about 80% higher in New York City than it is in Texas. Fatalities are a lagging epidemic indicator. That's a mouthful, okay? So take a deep breath and pay attention. Okay, here you go. Lagging epidemic indicator, right? So there are certain indicators. I know this because I studied economics in college, right? That are precursors to the fall, right? And it might be, you know, the origination of new loans. It might be a certain kind of consumer buying, right? That you will see that contract before you see the economy. So that's called a leading economic indicator. Okay, this is called a lagging. So deaths appear on the backside of these other statistics. All right. Most people who die have been in the hospital for 2 to 3 weeks. But deaths are also not surging. Texas has recorded 151 deaths in the past week versus 221 in the last week of April. Florida has reported 239 deaths, 72 fewer than in the last week of April. Deaths are probably declining in part to better and earlier treatment, but this means there's less to fear from reopening. While Arizona has reported 114 deaths, 43 more than in the last week of April, its deaths per capita are similar to 325 that New York has reported in the past week. Mr. Cuomo over the weekend boasted that New York did the impossible and crushed the coronavirus curve. New York has made enormous progress since the early days of the pandemic, which hit the state harder and earlier because of its population density, mass transit, and international travel. We aren't among the revisionists who say Mr. Cuomo should have locked down New York earlier. But other states that didn't impose strict lockdowns and have been gradually reopening have kept the epidemic under control and not paid the high economic price that New York has. Some 7.3% of workers in Arizona and Florida and 11.4% in Texas are collecting unemployment benefits in late May compared to 18.7% in New York. And the editorial closes with this. And this, and again, I read this because there's a lot of data in it, okay? And I like data, okay? More infections are inevitable as states reopen, and there will be much trial and error. States need to be vigilant for outbreaks and protect high-risk areas and the vulnerable. But the costs of shutting down the economy are so great in damage to lives and livelihoods that there is no alternative to opening for the broader public good. Now, like I said, I don't know if the Wall Street Journal's editorial board listens to Allmarine Radio, but they could have written that editorial a month ago. They could have sent that or written that a month ago. So, anyway, but the data. So again, what do we focus on? Hospital admissions, ICU beds, okay? Not simply, oh, more cases, right? There's going to be more cases. We hit play, right? We came out of pause, all right? So know all that. All right, we're going to take a break. Oh, wait, I got to do top five stories in early bird. Yeah, don't let me forget that. Another email about Seattle. Matt, can we go back to Seattle? Seriously, is this thing a joke? Are the people in Washington brain dead? What in God's name is going on there? A bunch of idiots take over six blocks. Three of them looks like are parks. And everybody just stands around their hands in their pockets. What is the nation coming to? The rule of law applies to everybody. That's a joke. As it seems like the mayors around this country absolve the guilty from their lawless behavior. On an encouraging note, as I was perusing my news feed yesterday, I saw where arsonists and robbers and looters were being charged because it seems like everybody's got a camera on their business. And these idiots were stupid enough not to hide their faces and their tattoos. Memo to you idiot looters out there. Next time you should be smarter. No, you're going to be on camera. Cover up. Unbelievable. Enjoy the program. Thanks for the encouragement today. It is crazy. Yeah, you know, I saw one of the stories about the arsonist, if it's the same one, it's a woman. She set like six police cars on fire. And she had tattoos. and they found her. Is she going to go to jail for, I mean, there's like six counts of arson, each count with a 10-year sentence max? Let's just say she gets five for each. She gets a group rate, 30 years in prison. Congratulations. Was it worth it? Was your statement worth it? And you know what? The only way that you're going to send a message to people is these people have to pay a price for what they did. I mean, honestly, the two lawyers in New York City that threw a Molotov cocktail into a van that had four police officers in it, how they're not charged with attempted murder? I don't know. How does that happen? Two fucking lawyers did that. What are they, freedom fighters? Stupid. Stupid. Okay, top five stories in Early Bird. Number one, Milley says he was wrong to accompany Trump on church walk during George Floyd protest. That's an Associated Press story. The real story to that is, and the Twitter account was silent. Yeah, how about that? Yeah, the flamethrower in chief, I've never seen that happen. Didn't get the flamethrower. He did not get the blowtorch out. All right, number two story. West Point grad's letter to class of 2020 calls out one of the most powerful alumni, Esper. Uh-oh. It's by Megan Myers. On the eve of their graduation for the United States Military Academy, a group of hundreds of West Point graduates published a letter Thursday rebuking the politicization of the U.S. military. The letter comes 2 days before President Trump is scheduled to give an address during a commissioning ceremony on campus, for which 1,000 cadets have been recalled from sheltering in place at home during the COVID-19 pandemic. Quote, by accepting your commission, you incur a moral purpose and obligation to provide for the common defense. In doing so, you enable the nation to fulfill the range of its aspirations, the concerned alumni wrote in the letter published by the website Medium. Today, our constitutional aspirations remain unfulfilled. Inspired by what prosecutors say is the murder of a black man, George Floyd, at the hands of a white police officer in Minneapolis and its aftermath, the alumni implored the class of 2020 to show better leadership than the example they have been given. So this is a letter from an alumnus to them, right? Quote, we are concerned that fellow graduates serving in senior level public positions are failing to uphold their oath of office and their commitment to duty, honor, and country. The letter reads, a direct criticism of Defense Secretary Mark Esper, who was in the class of 1986. Their actions threaten the credibility of an apolitical military. We ask you to join us in working to right the wrongs and to hold each other accountable to the ideals instilled by your alma mater, and affirm by each of us at graduation. Yikes. Number three, two-star on joint staff was quietly removed in January amid an Army investigation. Who's this? Major General Joseph Whitlock was the Deputy Director of Global Policy for the Office of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in a May 2019 photo. He was quietly removed in January due to a law enforcement investigation that resulted in three charges, all of which were dismissed this month. He was accused of domestic abuse, conduct unbecoming of an officer. Whitlock was investigated by Army Criminal Investigation Division regarding multiple incidents, all of which he denied. Whitlock, through his attorney, Jonathan Crisp, denied the allegations in the Army CID findings. Crisp, the attorney, characterized the investigation as a witch hunt, stemming from political pressure through the years to aggressively pursue domestic abuse accusations in the military. The Army CID investigation was triggered by accusations that Whitlock pushed his girlfriend, breaking her arm. That specific accusation never resulted in formal charges, according to Chris. But it did result in an investigation by CID that brought forth assault accusations from an ex-wife. An ex-wife? Does that mean he's got more than one? All right. Anyway. So, yeah, this dude's in the news. The gossip part of the DOD. Number four, SecDef orders after-action review of the National Guard efforts during the civil unrest. Preliminary indications, as I said before, is that the Secretary of the Army, dude named McCarthy, he was all in the middle of that shit. The helicopters flying around doing stupid shit. Yeah. And again, all whipped into a frenzy by the president. Right? I want action. I won't have this. Okay, you need to fucking relax, okay? This is not your show yet. But I want it to be, just like in Seattle. I will get involved. Didn't we just go through this shit? Stop it already. Number five, Senate panel okays $6 billion military fund to confront China. We've talked about the Pacific Deterrence Initiative. Yeah. The sister, brother, or kinfolk. Depending on where you're from in the country. Kinfolk for all you rural type people. Okay. For Daryl and Marilyn down there in Arkansas. Kinfolk. That's right. Senate panel okays $6 billion military fund. Right. So, again, the European Defense Initiative has been credited with a lot of the different initiatives you see throughout Europe. In particular, moving the U.S. defense power projection further to the east, right? And, you know, things you see in Poland, things you see with other allies, right? And all designed to be part of a deterrent strategy that the Russians would look and say, yeah, it really is not worth it. That's too much, too many people, too many countries involved. Now, obviously, the need is to do that in the Pacific. So, $6 billion. So, it's the Senate version. The House version, God only knows what that will be. Okay, overseas operation, then we're going to talk food. Russia, NATO conduct parallel war games over the Baltic Sea. Nice. Russia putting on their best face like they can hang, and they clearly can't, but they do a great job faking like they can't. The Associated Press story about the Indo-PACOM buildup, seen as a warning to China, and that, yeah, we're really not on our ass relative to COVID-19. And China condemned a provocative U.S. military flight over Taiwan. Wait a minute. What does China have to say about Taiwan other than fucking nothing? Oh, they claim it. Like the nine-dash line and the rest of their bullshit. China's bullshit, okay? Anyway. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk food. Robbie Schwartz, the number two All Marine Radio head chef, joins me here on a Friday, and we're going to talk some of his culinary expertise. He's a no shit cook, right? He started cooking when he was in high school, cooked in college, and so now you know him as Montana Man. Yeah, he's no bullshit. So he's going to join me. We're going to talk cooking. Don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it. The All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders